from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, from just off Leicester Square in London, where if I could open a window here, you'd hear the crowd that is gathered. There's a red carpet. Much like, I don't know, is it that we do a show here, by we I mean me, every time Tom Cruise has a movie premiering in Leicester Square, because it was 2 years ago, something like that, he had that incident with somebody in the crowd here for the Mission Impossible European premiere. And tonight, it's the European premiere of I'm not going to say the name of the movie. I'm only going to say that when it was a stage event, I won't say it was a play, their advertisements for it said, Spinal Tap meets Rocky Horror. Don't mention it, babe. I mean, really, literally, don't mention it. Ladies and gentlemen, a note on language. It probably has not escaped your attention this week that a certain public radio program is leaving the air. That is to say, it's no longer going to be producing new episodes. Now, there was a time when public radio existed in not just a separate economic and aesthetic universe from commercial broadcasting, but a separate linguistic universe as well. That time has passed. We in public radio now have focus groups. Some of us in public radio now care about ratings. And this week, a word crossed over from mainly the world of cable television, where programming for several years has been referred to as repurposed. Repurposed, ladies and gentlemen. So that word was applied this week to the old episodes of the broadcast that's coming to an end, which will now, according to the announcement, be repurposed. Now, as hard as I can to understand this, ladies and gentlemen, it seems to me that that's just not accurate. It's going to be for the same old purpose. It's being broadcast, so you'll listen to it and maybe give money. So it's being purposed. It's not being repurposed. What it is being is rebroadcast, repeated, rerun. When you can actually say the word rerun, I'll give you money. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to them. Ladies and gentlemen, supporting the troops? Yeah, sure. Since returning home from Iraq and Afghanistan, an untold number of soldiers have come down with puzzling health problems, according to Wired. Chronic bronchitis, neurological defects, even cancer are among them. Many of them are pointing the finger at a single culprit, the open-air burn pits that incinerated trash from human waste to computer parts at military bases in Iraq and Afghanistan. Nice, huh? Nice? Pentagon officials have consistently reassured personnel there was no specific evidence connecting the burn pits with the ailments. But now, only days after Wired uncovered a memo suggesting that Army officials knew how dangerous the pits were, an animal study offers up new scientific evidence that links burn pits to depleted immune systems. The dust doesn't only appear to cause lung inflammation, says Dr. Anthony Zima, the researcher who led this latest study. It also destroys the body's own T cells. They're at the core of the body's immune system. When they're depleted, the individual is much more prone to myriad infections and conditions. The Department of Defense, of course, didn't bother to collect adequate evidence like what the pits burned and which soldiers were exposed for researchers to draw meaningful connections or conclusions about the impact of the open-air incinerators. What a nice idea. Zima's study was only on 15 mice, so it's only an important first step. But it's increasingly clear that Pentagon officials were aware of the risk posed by the pits. Another memo written by Lieutenant Colonel Darren Curtis in 2006 and obtained by Wired warned of, quote, an acute health hazard, unquote, to personnel stationed at Iraq's Balad Air Base. Quote, it is amazing, he noted, that the burn pit has been able to operate without significant engineering controls being put into place. Support the troops, won't you? Will you support those troops? What's wrong with you? Ladies and gentlemen, there's so much talk. I think it was Newt Gingrich who going back to language for a moment, who popularized a term that had been sort of wandering around in the back alleys of history departments. The term is American exceptionalism. Sarah Palin picked it up and has dropped it now. But it's been bandied about a lot. This week, the leader of the opposition, the Labour Party, which is the opposition party in Britain right now, gave a speech. You know, there's a lot of talk about whether Scotland is going to secede. Hey, Rick Perry, from the United Kingdom. And so the leader of the British Labour Party gave a speech about Britishness and all of that. But along the way, he mentioned some facts about his own identity, and he was later questioned about them by an interviewer from the BBC.
Ed Miliband, people will understand it's not possible for a party leader to write every speech he or she makes, but this is a particularly personal speech, all about personal identity, your constituency, your hobbies, your personal background. Did you write it?
I did write it. That makes me guilty, I guess.
Near the start of it, you talk about your own life story and identity, and you say, I'm a Londoner by birth, Jewish, but not religious. And you speak quite a bit in the speech about your Jewish heritage, as you have done occasionally in the past. I'm interested, though, since you raise it, about that Jewish, but not religious section. Could you tell me about your religious beliefs?
I'm an atheist, and I've said that before, but my Jewish heritage is incredibly important to me. It's important to me, you know, my two parents in different ways, Holocaust survivors, my dad coming here as a refugee in 1940, my mum after the Second World War. So by history, it's important to me. I obviously am Jewish from two Jewish parents. You know, my grandmother made me chicken soup and matzo balls, a very Jewish dish. I visited her when she lived in Israel, like Woody Allen.
But in terms of religious faith, is it something you tried and then lost? You tried and found religion wanting? Tell me about that journey.
I suppose I've always... My parents weren't religious, so that obviously has a big influence, I think, on how we're brought up. I'm quite a sort of rational person, and I'm not saying that you don't need to be rational to be religious, but it requires a certain sensibility and a certain set of beliefs, and I suppose that takes me in a different direction. But I have huge respect for people who are religious, of all kinds of faiths.
Yeah, so, okay. He acknowledged, he caught his little thing about rational, and he loves all people, religious people of all faiths. But ladies and gentlemen, cast your mind over to this question. When have you ever heard, or when do you ever expect to hear, the leader of one of the two major parties in the United States say, yeah, I'm Jewish and I'm an atheist? British exceptionalism. The music on today's broadcast, the selections are all favorites of my father-in-law, Handel Owen, and this program is therefore dedicated to him. Hello, welcome to the show.
Oh, he's got a fine brand frame. I wonder what could be his name. He looks good to me, and all I can see is his fine brand frame. How long have you been around? Mr. Wynn, did you hit this big town? I want to scream, cause I've never seen such a fine brand frame. All that I have is a broken down chair, but I would gladly make him king on my throne. Don't be a square, why don't you come over here? Together we would really be gone. Oh, he's got a fine brand frame. I wonder what could be his name. He is solid with me, and all I can see is his fine brown frame. Beep, 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 beep. He's got such a fine brown frame. I wonder what could be his name. He looks good to me, and all I can see is his fine brown frame. Mr. Wynn, did you hit this big door?
on my throne. Don't be a square, why don't you come over here? Together we would really be gone. Ooh, he's such a fine brown frame. Honey, won't you tell me your name? Yes, solid with me, and all I can see is his fine brown frame. Now, Robert Taylor, Robert Young, or Michi and Gibbon are all as fine as mountain fable. You may not be classed with the elite, and you may not be hip to that jive like Mount and old Michi. But oh, baby, you look like Hercules done up in bronze. And I know I'm a clown whenever you're around, because I'm crazy about mad about wild about your fine brown friend.
From London, England, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Paul sounding better there than he did at the Jubilee concert. But that was just some fine British engineering at work. Now, ladies and gentlemen, a company's misogynistic tweet admiring the rear of a booth girl at a technology conference has ignited a sexism row in the technology industry. Asus, a Taiwan-based electronics company, came under fire as it introduced widely anticipated new versions of its tablet at a computer conference in Taipei this week. The company's Twitter account posted a photo from behind of a so-called booth babe, a model hired by companies as eye candy for their products, holding one of Asus's newest devices. So-called booth babes have long been a fixture of technology conferences, as well as virtually every other kind of advertising, especially inside of the trade as opposed to in public. Accompanying the photo of the slender model were the words, quote, "The rear looks pretty nice, so does the new Transformer AIO," which is the device they were promoting. The remark drew a firestorm among Twitter users. As the uproar grew, the company took to Twitter hours later to rebuke the comment. The original post was removed. The company tweeted, "We apologize for the inappropriate comment on Twitter earlier. We will take steps to ensure this doesn't happen again."
Barbara Walters, the grand dame of American
television news, has been forced to apologize after it emerged that she tried to use her influence to further the career of a former leading aide of the Syrian president Bashar al-Assad. Nice. An email seen by the Daily Telegraph showed that Walters
tried to help Scheherazade Jafari, the daughter of Syria's UN ambassador,
secure a place at an Ivy League university and an internship with Piers Morgan's CNN TV program. He still has that? They still have CNN? When confronted with the emails, which were obtained by a Syrian opposition group, the 82-year-old ABC broadcaster admitted a conflict of interest and expressed
regret
for her actions. Jafari was a close advisor to Assad and was at his side as Syrian troops stepped up their campaign of killing and repression. She would speak to him several times a day, sometimes calling him the dude in her adopted American accent. Jafari's father has known Walters for years, began dealing with the broadcaster late last year as ABC News lobbied for an interview with Assad. That interview in December made headlines around the world, so it was worth it. Nomura Holdings apologized for its employees' role in leaking information that was used for insider trading, confirming for the first time their involvement in three cases being examined by regulators. Nomura is a big Japanese securities firm. Nomura expresses its regret concerning the findings that non-public information was received from employees in such cases, they said in a statement. Germany's assistant coach Hansi Flick apologized on Friday. This is a football coach, soccer to us, for saying his players would need steel helmets for protection when Portugal's Ronaldo takes free kicks in their match coming up. The comment made on Friday caused a stir in Germany due to its military connotations. The German word for steel helmet not only refers to the actual military helmet used by German soldiers in both world wars, but also to a post-World War I paramilitary organization. "I am sorry if my unfortunate comment created irritations," Flick said in a statement. "It was a verbal error that should not create wrong impressions. It is not my style to use military vocabulary for sporting issues." Stuttering America's Got Talent contestant Tim Poe, who's been accused of exaggerating his military record during his audition for the show, has apologized for misrepresenting himself. claiming that he did not intentionally deceive anybody. I would like to take the time to tell the American people how truly sorry I am that they had to endure the incomplete facts, he told the New York Post. I understand how they feel. He explained he'd suffered brain damage from a grenade blast while serving in Afghanistan that left him with a speech impediment, stuttering. However, his story has been called into question on several fronts. A spokesman for the National Guard unit that Poe served in released a statement saying, Sergeant Poe's official military records do not indicate that he was injured by a grenade in combat while serving in Afghanistan, as he reports. The Minnesota Guard can also confirm he was not awarded the Purple Heart Medal for wounds sustained in combat. The doubts grew after it was revealed a photo that aired during Poe's audition segment and purported to depict Poe on duty overseas was actually of another soldier altogether. Free Metal Media, the production company, has issued its own apology for the photo snafu and emphasized Poe provided the photo.
Blame him. Blame the stuttering guy.
Former Seinfeld star Jason Alexander is apologizing after comments he made on Craig Ferguson's Late Late Show were deemed homophobic by a number of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender media outlets. Alexander took heat after he deemed cricket a gay sport and even referred to the cricket pitch as queer and not manly. I'm not sure I get the point of what he was trying to get at there. You know how I know it's really kind of a gay game, said Alexander? It's the pitch. It's the weirdest. It's not like a manly baseball pitch. It's a queer British gay pitch. I'm laughing already. Noting that he truly did not understand the offensiveness of his remarks, the actor released a statement via the GLAAD website. No, it's as apologetic as you can get, I guess. Dateline Hudson Valley, New York, Representative Nan Hayworth, spokesperson, has apologized for a comment he made, the spokesperson, on his Facebook page. Here we go. GOP consultant Jay Townsend released a statement on the site saying he posted a stupid, thoughtless, and insensitive comment on a Facebook page. It was stupid because my words were easily misconstrued. And he said they were insensitive because some have interpreted the comment as advocating a violent act, unquote. What was the statement? Quote, let's hurl some acid at those female Democratic senators who won't abide the mandates they want to impose on the private sector, unquote. I could misconstrue that. Couldn't you? Dateline Brazil. Some 120 Brazilians who were political prisoners during the country's military dictatorship received official apologies from the state of Rio de Janeiro this week. Among those the state acknowledged was the president, current president of the country, Dilma Rousseff, though she was not present herself at the ceremony. This is the latest in a series of public acknowledgments of abuses during 21 years of military rule from 1964 to 1985. So we can look forward to some of those here in about 25 years. We're under military rule, right? A Barnes & Noble executive apologized this week to a Scottsdale, Arizona man who was forced to leave the bookstore's children's section because he was not with any children. Omar Amin, 73 years old and loving it, said the incident occurred 1 month ago when he was shopping for books for his grandchildren at the Barnes & Noble store in Scottsdale. I bet it's in a mall, just, you know, because it's in Scottsdale. He's director of the Parasitology Center in Scottsdale and an expert in infectious disease. The vice president of Barnes & Noble issued this statement. We want to apologize to Dr. Amin for a situation in which Dr. Amin was asked to leave the children's section of our Scottsdale, Arizona store. We should not have done so. It is not our policy to ask customers to leave any section of our stores without justification. We value Dr. Amin as a customer and look forward to welcoming him in any of our stores. The company had previously declined to comment prior to an article appearing in the local newspaper. Last week, in fact, Barnes & Noble issued a statement saying it had acted appropriately in removing Amin from the children's section. He was removed after a complaint from another customer. Amin, he says he accepts the apology but still wants a face-to-face apology in the store and a copy of a reprimand letter to the employee who bounced him out. But wait, there's more. A nuclear research agency in Japan has apologized for comparing the behavior of a radioactive material to an angry wife. The Japan Atomic Energy Agency removed the page from its website after a public outcry over the comparison. It was using the analogy to explain the difference between radioactive material, radioactivity, and radiation. Wife's screaming to her husband can be compared to radiation, her agitated state to radioactivity, and the wife herself to radioactive material, it said. The agency just wanted to provide easy-to-understand information, especially to women because they had a lower level of understanding of nuclear power, quote. An agency official now says, we would like to apologize for creating unpleasant feelings. You heard about the big jubilee here in London? Well, the security firm Close Protection UK was contracted for the event. Now they've extended its sincere apologies for having workers, their workers, sleep under the London Bridge before working 14-hour shifts at the Jubilee Flotilla. That's a little float, I guess. Long-term unemployed who were bussed in to work the Queen's Parade on Sunday were forced to sleep under the bridge, change in public, and work 14-hour shifts, many of them for no wages. This is part of the government's work program, you see. Doesn't say work for money. Deadline Jersey City. Rite Aid has apologized to a New Jersey man who says he was denied the emergency contraceptive Plan B because he's not a woman. Andrew Andrade, 25, received an apology letter from Rite Aid. Please be assured that Rite Aid takes reports of incidents such as you reported very seriously. The incident you reported at the ACLU is being thoroughly investigated, including interviews of our store associates and management. Andrade said he went to a Rite Aid to buy Plan B for his girlfriend, but the cashier told him, I can't sell it to you because you're male. He asked for a manager who told him the same thing, so he left the Rite Aid and went to another drugstore, which sold him Plan B with no problem. We should know the name of that drugstore, but AP didn't service us accordingly. Olympic swimmer Nick Darcy has apologized after posting a photograph of himself and fellow competitor Kenrick Monk posing with guns on Facebook. They're under investigation after by Swimming Australia after posting those online photos of each other with weapons in the United States, where they and other London-bound swimmers were at a pre-Olympics training camp. He's smirking in the photo as he holds up a pair of automatic pistols. Monk smiles broadly, holding two pump-action shotguns across his chest. They were relaxing. It was just a bit of fun, he said, at Brisbane Airport. They went to a shooting range after their training. If anyone's been offended, obviously I deeply apologize. It was never the intent. It was never supposed to be offensive. And as I say, I deeply apologize to anyone who was offended. He's been in trouble before. He's convicted of assaulting a former swimmer in 2008 and was subsequently kicked off the Australian team and then banned from the World Championships the following year. Former President Bill Clinton is on his apology tour, appearing on TV this week. He said he regrets this stirring up and is very sorry for veering off message on the Bush tax cuts. The former president denied he's undermining President Obama, insisting he's fully committed to Obama's reelection.
I'm very sorry for what happened. I thought something had to be done on the fiscal cliff before the election,
he told Wolf Blitzer.
I support Obama's position on the tax cuts, and I think on the merits, upper-income people have to contribute to long-term debt reduction.
Blah, blah, blah. Deadline St. Paul, Minnesota. The board chairman for Fairview Hospitals and a senior vice president within Accretive Health both apologized for aggressive patient bill-collecting practices at a hearing chaired by Al Franken. In the hours following an earthquake in Italy, online travel company Groupalia tweeted, afraid of the earthquake, drop everything and run away to Santo Domingo. The tweet was shortly deleted, and the company apologized. The White House has apologized to President Obama's reference to a Polish death camp during the Medal of Freedom ceremony, but Polish officials remain offended, seeking a stronger, more pointed retraction. In other news, soccer players at the Europa 2012 event in Poland have already reported being hearing from the crowds anti-Semitic and racist comments, including monkey chants to the black athletes. So I guess Poland deserves a bigger apology for the description Polish death camp. It was, of course, Nazi death camps in Poland, which the Poles really didn't like. More? Yes, a couple more apologies. Reviewing these now. British billionaire Richard Branson has offered an apology to British Columbia Premier Christy Clark for a racy blog post he authored in which he invited Clark to ride naked on his back while kite surfing. No more really need be said. The top American commander in Afghanistan apologized to Afghans on Friday for a coalition airstrike that killed women and children in Logar province earlier in the week. Isn't that ironic? In Spanish, Logar means home. Yes. Major General John Allen flew to the province just south of Kabul to meet with villagers and offer his condolences for the bombing Wednesday that Afghan officials said killed 18 civilians. The strike was called in by U.S. troops after they came under fire while pursuing a Taliban fighter, a fighter, in a village in the Baraki Barak district. Yes, the district is called Baraki Barak. I know that no apology can bring back the lives of the children or the people who perish in this tragedy and this accident, but I want you to know that you have my apology, and we will do the right thing by the families, Allen told the Afghans, according to the AP. NATO troops often make condolence payments to the families of victims in civilian casualty incidents. Speaking of which, the Times of London reports today, NATO often announces no public apology in Afghanistan, but then deliver private apologies to the relatives somewhat later. NATO admits its errors behind closed doors and away from the public eye, according to the Times of London, for which I actually paid. Don't get on me, Rupert. And the New York Daily News spokesperson says, well, he actually sent this apology to the Latino Rebels website for using a Cuban flag on its Puerto Rican Day parade promo. The apology says, as the presenting media sponsor, which I guess the Daily News was, the Daily News apologizes to the Puerto Rican, Cuban, and other Latino communities, as well as parade sponsors who were offended by our honest mistake. It will be rectified in tomorrow's paper. Of course, that will be after the parade. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
How sweet it is to be loved by you. How sweet it is to be loved by you. I needed the shelter. Understand my ups and downs. There you were, with sweet love and devotion, deeply touching my emotion. I want to stop. Thank you, baby. I want to stop. And thank you, baby. Yes, I do. How sweet it is to be loved. Feel so fine. How sweet it is to be loved by you. I close my eyes at night, wondering where would I be without you in my life. Everything I did was just a bore. Everywhere I went, seems I've been there. Thank you, baby. Thank you, baby.
From London, this is Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. From The Guardian. It was the sight of a young male, Adélie Penguin, you'll check my pronunciation on that, won't you, attempting to have sex with a dead female that particularly unnerved George Murray Levick, a scientist with the 1910-13 Scott Antarctic Expedition. No such observation had ever been recorded before. As far as he knew, Levick was horrified. Worse was to come. Levick spent the Antarctic summer of 1911-12 observing the colony of penguins at Cape Adare, making him the only scientist to this day to have studied an entire breeding cycle there. During that time, he witnessed males having sex with other males and also with dead females, including several that had died the previous year. He also saw them occasionally caress females and chicks and occasionally kill them. Levick blamed this astonishing depravity on hooligan males, wrote down his observations in Greek so that only an educated gentleman would understand what he had witnessed. He produced a paper in English titled Natural History of the Adélie Penguin. The section about the animal's sexual proclivities was deemed to be so shocking it was removed to preserve decency. But he used this material as basis for a separate short paper, which was privately circulated among a handful of experts. His observations turned out to be well ahead of their time. Scientists had to wait another 50 years before the remarkable sexual antics of the Adélie were revealed. Now a copy of Sexual Habits of the Adélie Penguin has been unearthed thanks to the curator of birds at the Natural History Museum in London. The pamphlet commented on the frequency of sexual activity, autoerotic behavior, and seemingly aberrant behavior of young unpaired males and females, as described. The bird expert says recent studies have helped understand the behavior of these hooligan penguins. They gather at their colonies in October to start to breed. They have only a few weeks to do that, and young adults simply have no experience of how to behave. Many respond to inappropriate cues, hence the seeming depravity of their behavior. For example, a dead penguin lying with its eyes half open is very similar in appearance to a compliant female. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, the latest from AFPAC. In addition to the news that NATO apologizes in private while denying it in public, but 21 criminal indictments in the huge Kabul bank fraud case have been sent to a special tribunal at the urging of President Karzai. Karzai has also called for the disarming of a unit of the American-backed Afghan local police whose members are accused in the rape and abuse of an 18-year-old woman in the northern province of Kunduz. The Kabul bank, of course, likened to a Ponzi scheme by Western officials. Among the beneficiaries of the strangely lax loan policies there were Mahmoud Karzai, President Karzai's brother, and Hassan Fahim, who is the brother of the first vice president. And the New York Times reports that there's turmoil inside the Karzai family as the end nears for President Karzai's days in office as president. One brother, Kayum, is mulling a run for the presidency when his brother steps down. Other brothers have been battling over the crown jewel in the family empire, the largest private residential development in Afghanistan. It's provoked accusations of theft and extortion, even reports of an assassination plot. One Karzai brother is said to have imprisoned a longtime Karzai aide in an effort to make him disclose the whereabouts of money and assets that relatives suspect were hidden by Wali Karzai, another of the brothers, who was assassinated last year. Several political observers in Kabul say any candidacy by Kayum, a longtime Maryland resident, would be a long shot because of the nation's fatigue with Hamid Karzai, the president's family, many of whom are American citizens who returned after the invasion, are among those who have prospered the most during President Karzai's term in office. The housing development is on the outskirts of Kabul, being developed by a corporation owned by Mahmoud. Yes, another brother, that other brother. Shah Wali Karzai, still another brother, was an employee of the company that was building the housing development. At some point in the past few months, he created his own corporation in Kandahar and then secretly moved all of the cash from the housing development's bank accounts to those of his new business. I know, it all sounds like this. From Afghanistan Public Radio, where even the news is repurposed.
From the newly secure wing of the presidential palace in downtown Kabul, where you can move in for a low down payment.
Please, no hustling on the air. I'm Hamid.
And I'm Mahmoud. We're Buck and Schmuck, the Haggle brothers.
No haggling either. Oh. Welcome to another edition of Karzai Talk. Today's program comes to you with the assistance of the Karzai Family Fund. Either the money goes here, or God knows where it goes.
Oh, I know where it goes, to hire my killers.
This shows, in a way, we are more advanced than our American brothers.
Oh?
Their celebrities brag about having stalkers. Mm-hmm. Here, you're nobody until somebody's out to kill you.
I hear the ultimate status symbol is if your would-be assassins are from Dubai.
Oh, yes. The gold-plated silencers are the tip-off. But you know, it's funny. Mm. After 10 years of working together, we and the Americans still don't speak the same language.
Besides money, you mean?
The universal language. But I told them I wanted the Afghan local police disarmed after that recent ugly incident.
Yes, and?
And they took away their weapons.
And you meant?
I wanted their arms cut off.
The traditional meaning?
Of course. Ask yourself, have you ever met an armless rapist?
It's ironic because in our family, so many of us have lived in America or were even American citizens.
Yes.
And we speak their language pretty well.
We're speaking it now.
Only because we're hoping for overseas syndication.
By the way, speaking of which, the internet was full of rumors this week.
Lindsay Lohan rumors?
Those two. Mm. But these were rumors that we were going to retire.
From the radio program?
From the whole deal.
Well, we can't leave government yet.
No, of course not. My brother's housing development still needs some of those very special permits.
The unwritten kind.
And we can't leave the radio show yet either.
Mm-mm.
It's the only way my brother can attract women.
Besides the money.
What was nice was that our producer went on Twitter and compared us to the Marx Brothers.
That's right. Unfortunately, he meant Carl and Jim.
Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hello, I'm Shah Wali Karzai, long-time brother, first-time caller.
Shah Wali, to what do we owe the honor of this call?
Well,
I told you privately, I don't have the keys to the bank.
Oh, it's true. He sold them to the Americans.
They didn't care that the money was gone. They were after the free toasters.
Well, I just had a question for Hamid.
My robes are not custom made. I buy them on the rack. That's the question he always asks me at family reunions.
A different question. If a person has managed to sequester a certain amount of funding in a series of numbered accounts, and now that person, let's say, wants to move some of those monies back into what we might call the non-shadow finance arena for purposes of whatever,
sure.
Does that always involve a potential tax liability?
Wow, he must think you're both H and R block.
Well, as you must know, Shawali, taxis in this country have long had a tribal connection.
Well, I've heard people talk about that. Mm-hmm.
So I would think that maintaining, or in your case, re-establishing good relations within the tribal family might serve you very well come tax collection time.
If that time ever comes.
Well, so you think that that could be done by reinvesting some of those funds in a project that, say, one of the family members might be trying to finish in a city much like our national capital?
You know, I think he's a mind reader. Mm. I know he's not a book reader.
Thanks for the call. Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hello, it's Kayun Karzai, first-time caller.
What is it, only brothers calling the show this week?
That's what happens when we never give out the phone number. So, my brother,
yes.
I hear you're running for my office.
Well, like half the people in this family, I'm running for my life.
Oh, come on, Guillaume. As I recall, you got mugged back when you were living in Maryland.
Oh, true enough. Mm. The only difference is back there, I couldn't be sure that the culprit was a blood relative of mine.
Saves the police a lot of time.
Well, the other difference is that when our police go on a stakeout, they really do eat steak.
Who is writing you material, Yakov Smirnov?
But seriously, do you have any advice for someone who aspires to succeed you, Hamid?
Don't govern like my brother.
Don't do business like my brother. Seriously, don't make the mistake of just governing for the people in the capital.
Oh, that is so right. It is a large country. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind the interests of the folks who'll be living in the close-in suburbs, too.
Assuming they can make the exorbitant payments.
To me?
No, to me.
Thanks for the call.
We had help today from the Afghan Future Foundation, reminding you this country's future is in its past.
Legal services for Karzai Talk from the law firm of Ketchum and Newcomb. I'm Hamid.
And I'm Mahmoud. Join us again next time for another edition of Karzai Talk.
This is APR, Afghanistan Public Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, the new F-bomb. I haven't talked about that in a while. First of all, in the Inspector General Department, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, they're supposed to be regulating the banks, hence the name, failed to spot widespread problems in the foreclosure practices of major banks between 2008 and 2010 because the agency's examiners underestimated the mounting risks, were given outdated guidance that did not address how the industry had changed. That's from the Treasury Department's Inspector General. So good work, boys. And, on the other hand, there's a contrary example. You know about Iceland? Yeah, I know, it's colder. No, seriously, you know what's happened since the F-bomb? They had an F-bomb hit them, too. They reacted. Icelanders reacted by pelting the parliament with rocks, demanding their leaders and bankers answer for the country's economic and financial collapse. Were they kettled? Arrested? Denounced as terrorists? Well, I don't know, but since the end of 2008, the island's banks have forgiven loans equivalent to 13% of gross national product, easing the debt burdens of more than a quarter of the population, according to a report published by the Icelandic Financial Services Association. Sounds pretty radical to me. Iceland holds the world record in household debt relief, says an official at a Danish bank. Iceland followed the textbook example, he says, of what is required in a crisis. This is Lars Christensen of the Danske Bank. You're welcome. The island steps to resurrect itself when its banks defaulted on $85 billion are proving effective. Iceland's economy this year will outgrow the euro area and the developed world on average. It costs the same to insure against an Icelandic default as it does to guard against such an event in Belgium. Now, Icelanders don't want to join the European Union. The island's households were helped by an agreement between the government and banks, which are still partly controlled by the state. That is so radical. To forgive debt exceeding 110% of home values. And the Supreme Court in Iceland ruled that loans were that were indexed to foreign currencies were illegal. So those were wiped out. The lesson to be learned from Iceland's crisis is that if other countries think it's necessary to write down debts, they should look at how successful the 110% agreement was, says Thorolfur Mathiasen, an economics professor at the University of Iceland. Without the relief, he says, homeowners would have buckled under the weight of their loans after the ratio of debt to income surged to 240% 4 years ago. Once it became clear in October 2008 that the island's banks were beyond saving, the government stepped in, ring-fenced the domestic accounts, and left international creditors in the lurch. That sounds radical. The central bank imposed capital controls to halt the ensuing sell-off of the Icelandic currency, the krona, and new state-controlled banks were created from the remnants of the lenders that failed. That sounds radical. And Iceland's special prosecutor said it may indict as many as 90 people, while more than 200, including the former chief executives at the three biggest banks, face criminal charges. But hey, that's Iceland. News of the F-bomb, ladies and gentlemen. The new F-bomb, foreclosure, and all of its consequences. And now, news of the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, safe, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe.
Addie the Atom just came in from seeing the preview of that film that's premiering. Did you like it, Addie?
Yeah, I split my sides.
Get it. The Tennessee Valley Authority said it accepts the verdict of its Inspector General. The construction of a new nuclear facility will run late and cost more because of poor management and lack of oversight. We agree with the report's fundamental findings and recommendations, TVA said at the end of last month. We also know that initial estimates were incomplete. Risk allowances were too small and site leadership ineffective, they said.
Aside from that, it was okay.
Yes, it was. Workers at the Tokyo Electric Power Company failed to pinpoint the source of radioactive water leaking from the suppression chambers of the tsunami-crippled reactors at Fuuk. They entered the rooms housing the suppression chambers for the first time since the nuclear accident on Wednesday of this week. Japanese media reported that contaminated water had accumulated to a level of about 18 feet in the two units, up to more than half the height of the suppression chambers. So that's some good suppression, wouldn't you say? But wait, there's more. Photos after the inspection show no sign of major damage to the facilities or equipment. TAPCO plans to fill the reactor's containment vessels with water and extract the melted fuel as part of decommissioning efforts. For this, the damage done to the reactor's containment vessels and suppression chambers have to be located and repaired. The operators of the Seabrook Nuclear Power Plant, I believe that's in New Hampshire, failed to properly detect a simulated radiological release and also failed to advise state emergency planning officials during a test of the emergency preparedness process in April. Plant staff also failed to detect the lapse until the Nuclear Regulatory Commission inspectors pointed it out, says the NRC. Multiple errors occurred during the full-scale biennial emergency planning exercise, according to the NRC report. The first error was the plant's emergency operating facility coordinator failing to recognize the radioactive release the test scenario would cause. That's a good start. The NRC itself failed to fully evaluate risks associated with its regulations on the storage of spent nuclear fuel and must draft new ones. That's from an appeals court judge. The commission's conclusion that permanent storage will be available in the future when it's needed didn't account for how its absence affects the environment now, says the U.S. Court of Appeals in deciding a lawsuit brought by New York State. The commission also failed to fully assess the dangers of storing spent fuel on site for 60 years after a nuclear plant's license expires. The commission's evaluation of the risks of spent nuclear fuel is deficient, said Judge David Santel, writing for a three-judge panel. Spent fuel, quote, poses a dangerous long-term health and environmental risk.
What does a judge know?
I don't know. On-site storage is the industry's only option due to the government's failure to establish a final resting place. It's a resting place, ladies and gentlemen, for spent nuclear fuel. The ruling bolsters the case for new argument against relicensing nuclear plants, says the spokesman for opponents.
What do they know?
What do they know? They're opponents.
They know opposition.
That's right. You got that. You nailed that one, Addie. Clean, safe, too cheap to meter. Our friend, the Atom. And just so you don't think I always have something unpleasant to say about the home of the Rubber Promise, the home of the homeless, Santa Monica. Santa Monica's city has won two court judgments against gold merchants. Goldline, hello Glenn Beck, will be paying $4.25 million to former customers under an injunction won by the city of Santa Monica in February. And Superior Gold will be paying $2 million towards customer refunds. So if you want to get cheated on gold and get your refund, Santa Monica is the place to be. Gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com and available as a free podcast through KCRW.com. And it'll be just like the folks at Seabrook, not making quite so many mistakes next time there's a test. If you'd agree to join with me then. But you already, thank you very much. Uh-huh. Chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Thanks to Adrian Bodenhaus. Bodenham. What did I do, Bodders? Here at Global Radio in London for help with today's broadcast. And thanks to Judith Owen for help in the preparation of today's broadcast. And thanks to C.J. Vanson for technical advice that got me through the jungle at Apple. Where it just works, I guess, isn't their slogan anymore. This broadcast is on Twitter. Join the more than 63,000 followers at The Harry Shearer. And The Big Uneasy is now available for viewing on Netflix as well as on Amazon and iTunes, should you care to see it. And the email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music heard here on available at the soon-to-be radically revamped harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless, the place to get your gold guaranteed refunds, and the home of the rubber promise. So long from London.